Let's go, baby. Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. It's 2026 and the world is your oyster. Also, oysters are fucking gross. Back to the regular show. Today we're going to go through the games that were. I'll share with you everything that's coming in with incoming four exclamation marks. I'll take you through what's got my attention in crowdfunding and then we'll sit down with the voices in my head. Strap in. On with the show. Well, it's been a minute, OMC crew. My pre-Christmas work schedule was unnecessarily aggressive. And just before Christmas, I managed to contract the plague. The current flu doing the rounds in Australia is a doozy, and I was man down for about 4 days. Then it was turkey, ham, cheese, wine, some more cheese, New Year's Eve. It's all a freaking blur at this point, but here we are. Super Trooper and I have managed to bang on a couple of bonus episodes. Our 2025 Unwrap is already live for your earhole fetish. And we've recorded our 2026 Token Aspirations, which should be available in the next couple of weeks. I'm away on another holiday later on in the month, so I'm hoping to preload a couple of eps for you guys. Yes, I'm that guy. Another holiday. So the games that were... I didn't get much played leading up to Christmas for reasons. I was... You know, if you're a regular listener, I work in the hospitality realm. And leading up to Christmas, it was super uber bonkers. But damn, the last 10 days have been packed. And here for your pleasure are some of the highlights. I am not going through every game because we would be here until my birthday in March, at which point there'll be another 10,000 games for me to share with you. But kicking off a few of the tops for me. Pina and I finished the 2025 exit calendar. The Exit Advent Calendar, that is, just before Christmas. If you have never done these, they are an absolute blast. I'm not going to put any spoilers here because a lot of people like to do these out of cycle, out of season, or from 1 year to the next. But we thoroughly enjoyed it. We always enjoy it. And we will do this every year until the peanut decides it is not cool anymore. Started with our group. That was with Project L, the Cracker, and Super Trooper, which are sort of my regular usual suspects. We've started Regicide Legacy. Full disclosure, Regicide Legacy is a review copy that's provided to us by Badgers from Mars. Thank you very much to Luke and the team. So Regicide Legacy, if you haven't played Regicide, Regicide is an absolute triumph of small board game design. You can actually play with any deck of cards. Now, I highly recommend you play with the Regicide cards that Badgers from Mars publishes because the Sketch Goblin, who does all the art, has spectacular art. The art is wonderful. And it's got its own style, and it's really special. And it's not expensive, right? And you can play with the deck cards. You can download the rules, you can play with any cards you like. But the Regicide cards are really quite something nice to look at. And in Regicide, it's a co-op game, and you are trying to murder all the royalty. You start with the Jacks, then you move on to the Queens, and you go to kill the Kings. And they are aggressively harder as you go along. And Regicide Legacy is the game of Regicide that has some story elements. I can't tell you what they are yet because despite about 7 tries, we haven't yet beaten the first scenario, which is essentially just regular Regicide. Now, Regicide on a good day is a hard game. And it's not a game that, like, for me, Regicide's always been about... It's about the journey. Regicide's always about the experience. It's not necessarily about winning. I think I've won 1 or 2 games of Regicide solo in all the games of Regicide I've played, which isn't hundreds, but it's a lot. But playing co-op, it's about the puzzle. It's about what you've got. You have very limited communication, so you can't exactly go, well, I've got a diamond in my hand. I can get some cards for us. Each suit does something different. So spades eat away at the particular targets, shields. Clubs do double damage. Hearts refill your draw deck and diamonds draw from the draw deck. There's some additional layers of challenges in that if you are fighting a queen of diamonds, you can't get the benefit of the diamonds in that you can't draw cards. So you've got these four crippling handicaps as you go through the diamonds, clubs, spades, and hearts that are on the actual, you know, the cards themselves. It's a delight. It's a great puzzle. It's very hard. Ridgeside Legacy, what it does is every time you lose, you've got the opportunity to purchase these extra cards that go into your deck, which can boost what you do. I think we've got seven of them in there. We still can't quite, and that's not to turn you off the game, right? Because I think the puzzle's fantastic, and I know the group I've got, we're really hungry to crack this. But I think, you know, three of four of us had never played Regicide before at all, I think I've got that right. And so you're learning the game and then trying to learn how to, I guess, silently communicate and indicate and whatnot. Very much looking forward to more goes of this. I think the production quality for Ridgeside Legacy, which was a crowdfunding project, I believe it was Kickstarter. I think it delivered about 4, 5, 6 months ago, is fantastic. You've got lovely neoprene mats. You've got lovely little metal overlays for the particular targets, health points, and their shield, which is their hit back. The art on the cards is fabulous. It did throw me a little bit because, you know, you crack open Regicide Legacy and the suits are different to when you play normal Regicide, but it's about half a game and you fall straight back into it. I'm very much looking forward to getting at it a little bit more and cracking deeper into it. I think Regicide as a game is something that is very easy to learn. It's very easy to teach, and it's a very nice, the wrong word, it's a very tasty, spicy little filler that's co-op. So there's no hard feelings unless you really suck at it and you screw the whole table. So yeah, Regicide, that is by Badgers from Mars, art by the Sketch Goblin. That is Luke Badger. I'm sorry, I don't have the name of his co-designers at my fingertips, but we're very much looking forward to more Regicide Legacy in our group. Well, now we're playing another Legacy game, the same group of four of us. We're working our way through Clank Legacy Acquisitions Incorporated. We managed to get a couple more scenarios of that, and I believe we're up to scenario 7, and there are 12 in the campaign. If you have not played Clank, I know I've talked about Clank a little bit on this show. I only discovered the Clank system this year. I was a Clank late bloomer. Clank is a very similar sort of game to, and when I say similar, very broad brush to something like Quest for El Dorado, and that it's a deck builder. You're working your way through your deck, you're adding more cards to it, and the cards allow you to move, attack, and buy more cards, basically. I think Clank has a lot more theme, it's got a lot more flavor on it, otherwise they're quite similar games, and Clank Legacy has been really fabulous. In our first scenario of this particular session, we were moving into the underworld. Now, that's not much of a spoiler, because when you first open up Clank Legacy to set it up, you'll see one side of the player board is the overland and one is the underworld. So it's not much of a spoiler to let you know that we are in the underworld. The gameplay is the same, but the theme and the flavor is very different. And we are really enjoying this. There's a lot of push and pull. There's a lot of pacing, throttling you can do as a player. You know, if you're a player and you're like, well, I am in a bit of a pickle, I'm going to race and get the... Because in Clank, you're trying to get a treasure and get out. Get a treasure, get out. If you get out of the dungeon, you get extra points. If you get to a certain point, a certain place in the dungeon, but don't quite get out, you still get to score, but you don't get the bonus points for getting out. So if you're like the Cracker, and he's like, screw you guys, he will race for the biggest treasure he can get in as short a period of time, maybe not the smallest treasure, and race for the exit so you know it's all on. You don't have to get out before the Cracker does, but once he's out, the escalation of the game very much cranks up. And for every player that does leave, if you are left in the dungeon, it gets bad very quickly. I'm really enjoying Clank. Clank Legacy. I feel like the other people at the table are really enjoying it. No one's refusing to play anymore. You know, when you do have the bunker, when you're the owner of the bunker, you kind of get to say, this is what we're playing sometimes. Our general rule in our group is whoever hosts gets to pick first game or pick one of the games. So no one really ever complains. But yeah, Clank Legacy Acquisitions Incorporated. This is designed by Andy Clotis, Paul Denon, art by an army. There's like 7, 8, or 9 artists. And similarly, it's published by Direwolf and 8 other publishers. It's been around for a while. It's not brand new. I think you've got Clank Legacy Season 2 is out. And given that they're so easy to get through, you know, another 2 sessions maybe, we might be through the whole thing. I would say that, you know, I'd be very happy at this point to play Clank Legacy 2. I'm really enjoying Clank Legacy. Project L went all in on Puerto Rico 1897. I was going to say 1987. I'm like, I'm not sure that was such a... I don't think there were slaves in 1987 in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico 1897, the special edition that was released following successful crowdfunding. Of course, it was Awakened Realms. I don't think they have unsuccessful crowdfunding. If they sell anything, it's 29 million euros. So Project L went all in on Puerto Rico 1897. Note to self, there are no slaves in Puerto Rico. There are now staff. It's a nice little change. I mean, we know that in 1897, Puerto Rico was powered by slaves. We don't have to have slaves in 2025. Thank you very much. So Puerto Rico, special edition with all the toys. It is very beautiful. It's very tactile. I thoroughly enjoyed playing Puerto Rico. I had never played Puerto Rico before in any format. I think Super Trooper owns the unplayable version of Puerto Rico, but my understanding is he's never actually managed to get to the table. We play this four players. I believe it plays five at maximum player count, and it's basically an economic Euro. You know, you're trying to build an engine in front of you. You've got a number of fields, a number of spaces that you can create buildings. You plant a crop, and if you're planting coffee, you need to have the coffee processing plant to process the coffee. If you don't have that, you can't do anything with the coffee. It's just sitting there. You also have to have workers on both of them. So you have to have the coffee plant, the coffee field, worker in the field, worker in the plant, and then you can make one bag of coffee. Woo! Bag of coffee. And then that bag of coffee can go to the trader and generate a little bit of money, or it can get on a ship where it will generate 1 point. Now, that sounds really shit. Like, why would I generate 1 point when coffee's worth $4, whatever the case is? Well, you don't win the game with dollars. You win the game with points. There are three ships that you can load up, and each ship can only hold one type of good. And once the shipping action is taken, everyone has to ship their goods. So if you can't fit your stuff on the ship, it will spoil. There's a special upgrade you can take that lets you hold on to one type or two type of goods that don't spoil. But if you don't have that, you get to keep one crate of goods. You might have 12 crates of goods, and if you can't ship them, you get kerfucked when it's shipping time. Puerto Rico is not a new game. It's one of those classics that Awakened Realms have been redoing, like the Castles of Burgundy, like Agricola, which they are in the process of producing right now. And I can see why it's one of those evergreen classics. I really enjoyed Puerto Rico. I enjoyed it a lot because it was a very pretty, very tactile game. Much like I enjoy I've got the upgraded, the Uber Deluxe version of Castles of Burgundy, and I could play the other one, but I would find it less fulfilling. And that, maybe that's a little wanky, a little douchey. I'm okay with that. You can label that whatever you like. But the fact that I can pull these beautiful, chunky acrylic tiles out of the bag, and I've got the 3D castles, I don't have all the buildings because that would just annoy me, having to find every single monastery, every single building. But I do have the very pretty version with, you know, the triple layer boards and the overlays and every expansion. And I really like Castles of Burgundy. I really enjoyed Puerto Rico. And I would play Puerto Rico anytime. As I said, Project L has the uber pretty version, and it made it very, very special to play with. That is designed by Andreas Seyfarth, art by Jakub Zakowski, and published by Awakened Realms. I believe it's Awakened Realms and, I want to say Ravensburger. I could have that wrong. Definitely Awakened Realms, and obviously in partnership with whoever owns the rights. Super Joe and I managed to play a whole lot of Aeon Trespass Odyssey. I'm not going to bore you with that because I talk about that a lot pretty much every time we play it. We had a 14-hour day. We played Aeon Trespass for 14 hours. Yes, 14 hours. We started at 8 in the morning. We finished at 10 at night. We did have to break for two meals and you know, go to the toilet occasionally. We just eat this game up. We just can't get enough. We have also had a smaller day. We got another 6-hour day on top of that just the other day. So we've played a whole lot of Aeon Trespass, obviously. I feel like we're within a stone's throw of finishing Cycle 2. Cycle 2 is basically the second part of 5. And at a guess, Cycle 1 and Cycle 2, I'd say we're probably at a good 120, 140 hours for Cycle 1, Cycle 2 so far. At a guess. I'm literally throwing it at a dartboard. And no game fatigue whatsoever. Now, part of that is because the IP and the subject matter is something that speaks very much to Super Trooper and I. We're both very fond of that, you know, Greco-Roman, now this is Greek, but we're both very fond of that sort of ancient mythology and the storytelling, and the writing in Aeon Trespass is fantastic. the gameplay is aggressively challenging. You know, the basic rule book is 106 pages or something, and we have played over 100 hours of this game, and we still have to go to the rule book. And I'll say regularly, you know, in a 14-hour day? In a 14-hour day, we're probably at the rule book four or five times. Now, that might not seem like a lot in a 14-hour day, but after 100 hours in a game, you know, and it's just that there is so much going on. There's so many moving parts. There are a lot of edge cases, and we're able to resolve all the edge cases with the rules, but it's occasionally we've got to go to the rule book. We've got a new keyword or a keyword we haven't seen in a long time, or you know. It's a triumph. It's a triumph of gaming as by Into the Unknown Studios. We talk about it all the time, so I'm not going to go through it all, but we played a whole lot of Aeon Trespass, and it was fucking magnificent. Got to play a game that has been on my board game bucket list for a very long time. I literally bought this game, I want to say 3 years ago. Now, part of that's because at one point in my life, I owned a small chain of burger restaurants very near and dear to my heart. But that is Food Chain Magnate. Now, Food Chain Magnate is an older game. I want to say 2014. And I think I bought my copy in 2022 because I thought this game looks amazing. Now, Food Chain Magnate is by Splotterspellen. Splotterspellen? Not Spielen? Splotterspellen? Splotterspellen. It is. Here's my notes. Splotterspellen. And in non-Germanic countries, we just get lazy and say Splotter. So we call it a Splotter game. If you've played any Splotter games, you know what you are in for. This is a hyper-interactive. Now, full disclosure, I've not played Bus or Roads and Boats or Horseless Carriage or any of their other games. I would absolutely love to. I would absolutely love to. And the only reason I've not is because I've got a Splotter game that I had not played till the other day. But Splotter games have a reputation for extreme amounts of player interaction, huge amounts of being able to gazump other players and do certain things that, not necessarily steal points, but steal points, basically. And Food Chain Magnate was fantastic. In Food Chain Magnate, you have a randomized board. It's a very simple rule book. It's like 12 or 13 pages of rule book. I think that only 9 or 10 of those are actually meaty, you know, some of its components and that sort of thing. And realistically, you have a hand of cards and their employees, and you're pre-programming which employees you want to use in a turn face down, and you flip them face up. And then you, basically on your turn, you just run them. You run them. So the downtime is basically in the pre-programming. And it's not a lot. I mean, it could be 3 or 4 or 5 minutes maybe to pre-program, particularly in later stages of the game where you're programming 9 or 10 or 11 employees sometimes. But then once they're face up, it's really just, I'm going to do this and 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 this. And then, ba-chung, the whole board's changed because you are engaging in advertising. And when you advertise, you create demand on the board for something specific. You are engaging in deliveries of drinks, where you are zipping around the board to different sources to collect the three different beverages for your empire. You can put out new restaurants. And if I put a restaurant out that is, you know, within one block of one of Super Troopers' restaurants, but my prices are $1 cheaper, he may have advertised for burgers or pizza for the last three rounds. I plunk a restaurant and I undercut it by $1, and I get the benefit of all his advertising. They will come to me, provided I have the goods. Because if they want a pizza and a cola and a lemonade, and you only have a pizza and a cola, they're like, fuck you, Hammer's World, we don't want your stuff. They want it all or nothing, right? Food Chain Magnate is a remarkable bit of game design. It's ugly as fuck, right? It's got the smartphone ink look about it. It looks very transactional. But for all that, I think that's what it needs to be, because you've got to be able to grok that board in a second and a half by looking at it. You need to look at it and go, where are the soft drink sources? Where's the current advertising? How many more rounds is the advertising going for? Because you can see by looking at a billboard how much longer it's going to be advertising and generating desire for that particular product. You can see where all the restaurants are, and it's very clean. Lucky Duck, who got the rights to Food Chain Magnate and recently did a big whiz-bang Awakened Realm style production for Food Chain Magnate. They've done it with plastic minis and little buildings and all this stuff, and it looks fabulous. I don't think it looks any easier to grok than the normal board, and I think and this is just personal opinion, I think the new version is a step backwards in art on the cards. The original Food Chain Magnate, which is the version I have, has this very retro 50s diner sort of look, that Norman Rockwell era painted look of the, you know, your waitresses and your CEOs and all the stuff on the cards. And it's fabulous. It's absolutely fabulous. And I'm not convinced that, given the way the game plays, that I would want the super version. Watch this space. You know, if I thought I was going to get it to the table once or twice a year, I might give it a go, because I'll tell you what, I really enjoyed Food Chain Magnate. It'd been on my list to play for many, 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 I would say many. As soon as I bought it, I want to say I acquired it 2.5 years ago. And I know that the other fellows at the table that were playing Food Chain Magnate came out of that going, can't wait to play that again. Because Food Chain Magnate is one of those games where you get to turn 5 and you go, fuck. And you think, I wish I'd played my first 2 turns differently. Now, none of us had painted ourselves into a corner, but it's the kind of game where if you don't have a good first 2 turns, you end up 10 turns behind. So we all did really well out of it. I think, anyway, Food Chain Magnate, loved it. Loved every minute of it. It is ostensibly a 3 to 4 hour game. I think we played ours in 2.5, right? So I think, you know, Food Chain Magnate has a history, not a history, has a reputation, rather, of being 3 to 4 hours. I think we were 2.5 to 3 hours with a quick teach. Everyone watched a video and everyone watched RTFM's video. Thank you, Shay. Great job on that one. So I think everyone had watched that video, which helped. But yeah, it wasn't, I was expecting it to be, you know, a really long game. And it didn't feel long either, because that board state changes so quickly, so often, and so meaningfully. You can't really tune out during other people's turns, because when it comes back around here, you look down and go, what the fuck happened? I looked away for, you know, 3 minutes and I'm done. Food Chain Magnate by Jeroen Dumont, Joris Virsinga? Maybe, don't know. Art by Another Army and published by Splodderspillen. Food Chain Magnate. Highly recommend. On the lighter fare, a few days later, I played Buttercup's copy, because she wasn't home, so we got to get it out when she wasn't looking. She recently got a copy of Flamecraft Duels. She's a big fan of Flamecraft. She loves the art. She loves the dragons. Flamecraft Duels is a very different game. Same universe, same art. That is Sandra Tang, who does a lot of work for Cardboard Alchemy. And same cute dragons, but it's basically it's a positional abstract, basically, where you are pulling dragons out of a bag and you're putting them down on a board, and the dragons have special powers. So where you place them will give you opportunities to move other things or swap tiles, or, you know, you're basically building patterns out there of colors. So think harmonies. You're more focused on the blue, the cream, or the blue, the yellow, the red, the gray, the whatever they are, the dragon that's on them, you kind of aren't attached to, because you're really focused on the colors. Because in front of you, you have some recipe fulfillment cards and you're trying to build patterns like you are in Harmonies. It was interesting because you'd pull a tile out, a chip rather, I don't know, they're little Bakelite acrylic discs. They're lovely in the bag, by the way. You pull one out, you go decide where to place it. And when you place it, each dragon will say, you can do this as a special power. So then you can do whatever it is. It might be swap 2 tiles around. And in the placement and the swapping the 2 tiles, you've got all kinds of opportunities to build the little recipe that's in front of you of placement. You score your card. It goes face down. You draw another one. And off you go. Look, it's if I had my choices, I'd probably rather play Harmonies. I think there's a little more in it. That said, it's very pretty. It's very easy to table. I would happily play it again. The placement, I guess the thing I liked about Flamecraft Duels is some of the little chips are dual color. That's where the duels comes from. So they have 2 different colors on them. So they can be either of those colors when you place them. They're also either of those colors when you want to score. Each color having a power is nice. It puts another layer on that made it very enjoyable. For games of that ilk, I would take Iliad any day. Iliad is a recent Reiner Knizia game. That is, again, it's positional abstract where you're popping tiles out and each tile can do something and the board shrinks as you go on. Not wholly dissimilar to Flamecraft Duels, but I thought a whole lot thinkier. I very much enjoyed it. I'm very happy that Buttercup owns it because it's a nice little filler. It's very pretty. And I said, Cardboard Alchemy's production is always 11 out of 10. They always produce games that are unnecessarily presented. This is no different. The whole game folds up into this little storage crate with a gold clip on it that clips it shut. It's very nice. And I don't think it was even that expensive for memory. So I'm very happy they bought it. Flamecraft Duels. That's by Manny Vega, art by Sandra Tag, and published by Cardboard Alchemy. Great game. Oof, played one of my new favorite games after that. When I say new favorite games, we got introduced to this by Project L. And Project L got this out. God, where were we? I think we might have been here in the bunker the first time. So she got this out. Anyway, I'm burying the lead. I'm waffling. This is Orbit by Reiner Knizia. So Project L bought Orbit by Reiner Knizia with all the lovely little wooden upgrades, which are a delight. They're delightful little chunky wooden upgrades. And Orbit basically sees you racing around a little solar system. And on that solar system, there are a number of planets. Ten planets. One's yours and there's nine more. So if you're yellow, you start on the yellow planet. If you're red, you start on the red planet. And what you've got to do over the course of the game is you've got a small hand of cards and you've got to play a card. And that card will have a certain amount of movement. You might say three on it and then might have a little picture of a red planet. So what you will do is you will move three spaces with your little spaceship and then the red planet will move once around its orbit. Simple, right? Yeah, you should see these orbits. They are mental. And I don't mean mental as a derogatory term for my ex. I'm talking about these orbits are, there is no gravitational pattern in the natural world that would cause these planets to orbit in this way. They go in all sorts of tangents, and it's wonderful because you'll have your hand of three cards, and your cards will say, well, one card will give me two movement, one will give me three movement, one will give me one, but then there'll be a different planet or combination of planets on each of them, and some of the cards, the two cards, let you move two, and they move every single planet. So there's a whole lot of fuck you going on, because if I'm in a space and I've got a selection of cards to play and I can't get anywhere near a planet, but I see Super Troopers three moves away from getting on the blue planet. Well, I can play the blue planet card in my hand and go, screw you. And the blue planet goes, zoop, and disappears. Now it's like 18 spaces away from him. It's a race game. It's a delight. There's a few more layers on there. There's a way to get extra movements. There's a few other bits and pieces. But let me tell you, I will play Orbit any day of the week. I immediately asked to borrow Orbit and brought Orbit home. And then we played it New Year's Eve with Fox and Buttercup. And they both loved Orbit. And when you get a game that our wives love, you know you've hit a home run, right? You know it. And it's one of those games that the Fox loved it, you know. And it's funny when you play games with the Fox. And she's so breezy. She's like, oh, what does this do? How do I do this? This card's interesting. And then you see her, she gets both elbows forward, not often, because she's not overly competitive, my beautiful wife, right? Not overly. We were playing Orbit, we got about 60% of the way in, and like the Matrix opened up for her, and she leaned in, and then she just went silent. She just went silent, and she near, did she win? I can't remember. I can never remember who won these things. I think it was one of us, either she or I, don't care. Right? I always say, I like to win. I love to play. But she drilled in on it and we finished it. And she just looked at me and went, oh, that was really good. It was really good. And so Orbit, I can't recommend it enough. If I could get the pretty version, I would probably have a copy on the way to the bunker already. Because I think Orbit is one of those gems of the last 20 new games I've played. Okay, that might be an over-exaggeration because now we're getting into realms of like Galactic Cruise and that sort of stuff. Light to medium weight. Of the last 20 light to medium weight games I've played, I think Orbit would be my favorite. I think it would be my favorite game of that sort of, you know, up to sort of 2.2 on BGG kind of thing. It would be my favorite of this recent release. Orbit's fantastic. That's by Reiner Knizia, art by the legendary Vincent Dutre, and published by Bitewing Games. Few more to go, peeps, because I played so many games, and this is really only just about 60% of them, but let's do a couple more. Got to play Sanctuary. Now, Sanctuary is the Ark Nova-esque cousin to Ark Nova game by Matthias Vigge. It's in the Ark Nova world. It's basically a tile layer. It's got a lot of DNA in common with Ark Nova. You have four action tiles in front of you. You are basically drawing tiles, placing tiles, and there's a few rules around that. What tiles you can draw or can't draw are based on the strength of the... They call them cards, but they're really sort of action tiles in front of you. they move an end cycle just like the Arc Nova cards, but it's much simpler. There's no money in this. There's no need to purchase enclosures of any sort. There's no need to spend a highly prized card like an associate card to go and claim a conservation success. Conservation is now, if you meet the requirements, you can claim them immediately. And look, we went in cold. I didn't know how to play. It was a bit of a rocky teach because I'm a shit teacher, but I played this with Martha, Buttercup, and Project L. And I want to say it was about 2 hours. I'm not sure it needed to be 2 hours. I mean, Project L since borrowed it off me, and I think she said it was 2 hours again with just herself and the cracker. But I got the feeling that maybe this one's just a little bit too meaty for the cracker's liking. Don't know. I haven't talked to him about it. I'm only sort of guessing. I think Sanctuary could be with two people who are Arc Nova regulars. I think Super Trooper and I would probably knock it over in 70 minutes. I get that feeling. I really enjoyed Sanctuary. Do I like it more than Arc Nova? No, but I would say I like it as much as Arc Nova. It's a different game for different people. The Fox will play Sanctuary. I have no doubt. She has played Arc Nova. I don't know that she loves Arc Nova, but she enjoys Arc Nova. She doesn't find it highly pressurizing because Arc Nova is very much, multiplayer solitaire. Sanctuary is much the same in that, you know, the only interaction or competition is for the tiles in the market and wanting to get the right tile. But beyond that, there's not a lot of interaction. It's a puzzle little tile layer. The Fox loves tile layers. I'm looking forward to playing it again, very much. Sanctuary by Matthias Vigge, art by Dennis Lohausen, Christoph Titsch, Felix Wermke, and published by Fuhrlein Spiel, and 11 others. Holy moly. Matthias Vigge, between Sanctuary, Arc Nova, and his recent crowdfunding for $12 million in plastic pieces, I hope the man is sleeping on a big pile of money. I really do. I hope he's coming out of this with a fantastic result because these two games are great. I did not pledge for all of the Uber stuff, largely because my good friend Project L has everything fancy Arc Nova coming, which means when it arrives, I can just throw my copy in the bin. Don't need it anymore. Whoop, see ya. I will not throw it in the bin. Oh, so many more, but this is probably my favorite of the recent plays. Team Super Trooper were over for New Year's Eve because our two families are fairly close-knit. And so they were here New Year's Eve. It was with Super Trooper and Buttercup and Beelzebubble. And we played some games through the evening. I said, look, Super Trooper was like, can we play ATO? And I said, no, don't be so greedy. We're going to play with our wives and we're going to play with our children. And he went, fine. Take your unpainted minis and shove them. Because, yes, my copy of Aeon Trespass is unpainted, which I was shamed mercilessly for recently. I can take it. It's okay. It hasn't hurt me any. 9:30 on New Year's Eve, I turned a Super Trooper and I twinkle in my eye and I said, quick game of Voidfall. And he looked at me sideways like I was touched and had to wear a helmet in the shower. And there was about a 1.8 second pause. And then he called my bluff and he said, I'm game if you are. Well, we didn't even say goodbye to our wives. It was like Roadrunner and Coyote dust in the lounge room. Pew! We were in the bunker and it was like a fucking pit crew setting up Voidfall. And so we had a two-play game of Voidfall set. I had to be record time. It was about 20, 22 minutes. We were ready to go. We went from deciding to play Voidfall at 9:30 to going to bed. Well, yeah. Okay, yeah. We didn't quite make it to midnight because we're old. 11:45, we were finished. Deciding to play at 9:30, game done and dusted 11:45. Spoiler alert, he kicked my ass. Well, he didn't kick my ass. I think he beat me by about 12. It's not really an ass kicking. Voidfall remains up there as... I don't know if it's going to get kicked off the number one spot for me by Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era, but I would say that if not, then Elder Scrolls is nipping at its heels. But Voidfall remains one of my greatest gaming experiences and favorite games of all time. And to round out 2025 with a two-player game of Voidfall was just the most spectacular way to finish. I loved it. Loved it. Baller move. Voidfall's by David Turksey and Nigel Buckle, art by Ian O'Toole, and published by Mindclash Games. And one more to touch on here, because I'm just so delighted that we're going to get this one off the ground, is yesterday was the 2nd of January, so that's, spoiler, it's the 3rd of January today. 2nd of January, I started the prologue, and we did the character creation with the Peanut and the Fox for Earthborn Rangers. So it was a little bit of a rocky start because the Peanut was absolutely wrecked from the Christmas season. So her patience wasn't quite there. A little distracted, but that's okay. We went through character creation. We went through the prologues. We all have Earthborn Rangers characters now. And we're ready to start Earthborn Rangers. I'm very much looking forward to this one. I think, you know, if we get two or three sessions in and the Peanut's just like, I don't get this game, we'll put it away and we'll pull it out again another time. I think the Fox is really keen because we played the prologue and she was like, oh. The Fox and the Peanut both love Clank. They're both deck builders. This has got a little more meat on the cards. The cards got a little more going on. But I think because it's a co-op game, I think we'll get there. Very, very excited about this. This is designed by Andrew Fisher, Brooks Flagerlevit, Andrew Navarro, Adam Sadler, Bradley Sadler, art by Joe Banner, and Evan Simonet, and published by Earthborn Games. I played so much more, all worth mentioning, but we would literally be here all day. It's been a very good 10 days. We're going to take a quick pause. I'm going to make you listen to an ad so that I can maybe get a third of a coffee or pay for the hosting. Probably use it to pay for the hosting. Thanks for your patience. Be back in a minute.
Inside, heaven's on fire, feels to divide.
And I am back, baby. I said that earlier. Back again. I'll be back. I am back. This week on Incoming, I had I really struggled to remember everything that had arrived. Not because I bought so much, you know, and so much arrived. I did get some great end of year deliveries. I had some stuff delivered that were outstanding crowdfunding games. Postman Pete was very busy. So let's start. So I got the Ivy Studios Pillars of Fate and Scales of Fate delivered. I'm very much looking forward to these. Pillars of Fate is their lane battler. It's a little bit like Compile, but with a little more going on. There's a little bit of to and fro. And very excited about that. These are both set in the Veiled Fate universe. I have not played Veiled Fate, but they're set in the Veiled Fate universe. And then you've got Scales of Fate, which is this wonderful push-pull two-player game with bluffing and just the tiniest bit of deduction. I'm not a massive fan of deduction games, but there's a little bit of deduction in there such that if you can deduce which gods your opponent is playing, you get a little points bump. It doesn't automatically win you the game, I don't believe. It gives you a little points bump. Recall, the fat man brought me Recall, popped it under the tree, very excited. Revive is one of my easily top 20 games. Recall's its spiritual successor. It was number one of the year for a number of content creators. I think Rado named it his number one in 2025. Very, very much looking forward to Recall. Was blessed. Ugh, I'm an atheist. Can I use the word blessed if I'm atheist? I was lucky that my dear mate Super Trooper bought me a copy of Glenmore 2 Chronicles. Now, that's 2 years in a row that Super Trooper's bought me a game for Christmas that I had no idea I wanted because I'm like, Glenmore 2 Chronicles, what the shit is this? I open it up, I'm like, this looks amazing! Looks amazing. So that's sitting on the shelf waiting to go for this year. Thunder Road Vendetta, Carnage, very much looking forward to this. Death Race is one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's got a whole Mad Max feel about it. I bought this because the version with the little washed minis is getting hard to get. And again, if you can believe it, I got a copy of this from Amazon UK delivered for less than $100. Now, for those of you that are overseas, you're like, Jesus Christ, $100 for Thunder Road. I'm in Australia, bro. In Australia, games are expensive. $100 barely gets you in the game store in Australia. Things are expensive here. So for me to get a copy of Thunder Road Vendetta for like $94, whatever it was, in the deluxe version, which is fading fast. Now I know Restoration Games will do another reprint, but I think this is the kind of thing that the Peanut will love. It's a great kind of thing that we can do on a party or whatever the case is, where it's not too serious. You're rolling dice, you're crashing cars. I love Mad Max. There's not much to it, right? It just looks like good, stupid fun. So that's arrived. 20 Strong, the Rose deck, which is the Beauty and the Beast deck. I picked that up direct from Chip Theory Games on Black Friday. Thank you very much. I'm very excited to get to that one. Cloudspire Harbinger delivered. Now, Postman Pete I'm surprised he didn't literally have some kind of aneurysm dragging this. This was two huge boxes because Chip Theory released obviously a, not obviously, may not be obvious, they released one of their great big storage crates that fit in the whole Kallax for Cloud Spire. This is the last of the Cloud Spire content. I will absolutely confess, I have not played Cloud Spire in about 2 years, but it will easily be one of my top 20 games because it is so, so, so spectacular. So I got all the rest of the content, not the minis. The minis were a little bit too far for me, and the crate. And the wonderful thing about the crate is everything I had Cloud Spire before filled a Kallax in boxes, and I easily got another Kallax worth of boxes of Cloud Spire. All of that fits into this crate into one Kallax cell. And there's a lot of talk out there about these board game coffins, these Uber boxes, you know, it's where board games go to die because they're such a pain. Look, I'm a little different in that I've got my own space for them. The bunker makes it a very special place that makes it very easy for me to get huge boxes out, unpack them, set them up, and it's not a burden on my living space. But these chests from Chip Theory Games actually make these gargantuan games easier to table because the whole front slides out, if you've never seen them. The whole front panel slides out, and you've got a little magnetized handle that pulls these individual drawers out. And what you do is you pull a drawer out, you get the parts that you want for that, you pop the drawer back in, you pull the next drawer out, you pull the parts that you want for that. It makes it very easy to table these gargantuan games without having to open up 15 boxes to get what you want. Very, very happy. So Cloud Spire Harbinger delivered, including there's a Cloud Spire 20 strong deck. So we're off on holidays in about 10 days going overseas. I am very much looking forward to taking all my new 20 strong stuff away. So yeah, and yes, not board game related, but my amazing, gorgeous wife totally indulged my inner man child. She stayed up till midnight when it went on sale to order me the Star Trek Enterprise D, which sold out in about 17 minutes in Australia. So yep, I am a man child. I'm okay with that. You can label it however you like. I'm very discerning about the Lego that I pick. You know, historically, if you look around the bunker, I've got a number of pieces. They are all Batmobiles to date. I've got all the Batmobiles that have been released because I'm a mad Batman fan. The only thing I love more than Batman would be Star Trek, you know, and it's very near and dear to my heart. If you've been listening, you know that last year in August, I lost one of my best mates, Steve, to cancer. And Steve and I, Steve was a mad Star Trek fan, and we used to sit around having a few drinks or coffees, depending whether it was 10 in the morning or 8 at night. And we just reminisce on the great moments in Star Trek, you know, Deep Space Nine and Voyager and TNG and Discovery, all of these. No one talks about Enterprise. We can't talk about Enterprise, right? Okay. Yeah. Enterprise is, yeah. Enterprise is like the Justin Bieber of Canada. You know, we just don't talk about Enterprise, but I loved it. And I thought, all right, mate, you know what? I'm going to make this happen. And I know that if he were around, he would be happy for me. So that came. And on a side note, it is my wedding anniversary today. So full disclosure, I basically won at life by convincing that total smoke show that I was the one. So yep, that's what's been incoming. Super Trooper and I also pulled the trigger on the sequel to Aeon Trespass Odyssey. We'd been talking about it all year, saying, oh, look, maybe, will we, won't we, will we, won't we? So we will be playing that until we can't remember our own fucking names at this point. Everything for Sins of Heracles, which is the sequel to Aeon Trespass, is coming. We went halves, and at that price, we're now basically married, so I now have two wives. So that's it. It's been a hot minute, so I'm sure there's some I missed. It was a big 4 or 5 weeks being around Christmas and whatnot. I have a whole pile of pre-orders and crowdfunding coming for 2026. It is going to be a stellar year for gaming. Interesting fun fact, my postman is actually named Peter, and this is doubly hilarious as I completely made up the name Postman Pete when I started this podcast. Also, Postman Pete is awesome. He delivered Harbinger, didn't even look at me like I was a literal bane of his existence. So, good guy. Welcome to FOMO Mofo, where I take you through my personal angst-ridden journey of capitalist acquisitionism. As always, this is not an exhaustive list of crowdfunding projects, but merely those that have my personal attention, either because they are by design and development team I like, a theme I enjoy, or because they have pretty toys, and oh man, do I love it when it's all three. Great news, OMC crew, I am looking at fuck all right now, and that's largely because it's all quiet for about the next 11 minutes. There's not much live on crowdfunding right now. I think you'd have to be clinically insane to launch a crowdfunding campaign today, given that we've just survived Christmas. Everyone's bank accounts are literally dust bunnies and good wishes. There are some campaigns that are on my radar for 2026. So, and in no particular order, these are the things that I've just got in my profile that I'm watching. Sky Empire The New Dawn. This is a steampunk 4X. I don't know anything about it except it looks gorgeous. It could be hot trash. Claustrophobia 1692. This is De Vere's first step into crowdfunding, as far as I know. I believe it's a reprint re-release of an older IP. Again, it looks gorgeous. And at this point in my life, De Vere has my trust. So I'm very much looking forward to learning more about this. Shiver Me Timbers. That's a game. It looks totally trash. But it's pirates, so I need to know more. Brass Pittsburgh. It's by Roxley, so it's going to be blinged all to hell. Very keen to see what they do with the gameplay. I generally love Martin Wallace's work, right? So this is really exciting. Galileo's Truth. It's a game about Galileo by the team that brought us Darwin's Journey. Darwin's Journey is a fabulous game. Old King's Crown Second Printing. I have a copy coming, allegedly, a retail copy that is a post-crowdfunding. I pre-ordered it when they were in stock. It went out of stock, but I've been told it's coming. The gameplay looks great. So this second printing is going to have a couple of expansions. And if the gameplay is great, I'm very much looking forward to the expansions. Sheol Midnight Odyssey. This one just gets a big shrug in asterisks. Like it looks grim, dark horror, something, 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 blah, blah, blah. It looks sexy, you know. So I'm shopping on this one with a half chub in hand. Labyrinth Chronicles, another overblown AR reprint that we don't need but may very much want. This is like an Indiana Jonesy labyrinthy game. It on first blush, it looks a little bit like it's only like 20-30 minutes family wait, but it looks great on the table. Looking forward to seeing more about that. Agricola Dead Harvest, because farming and zombies, it says 2026 to me in every possible way. I didn't back the big whiz bang Agricola campaign largely because, and look, take this from the vantage point from which it is offered. I've never played Agricola. I wanted to play. I tried to play. I borrowed Project L's copy of Agricola, thinking, look, I'll play it, and if I like it, I'll back it. I unpacked it. I set it up. I read the rule book. The fox was like, look, you want to play this game? I'll play it with you. I think Agricola would be in her wheelhouse because it's at the right weight. And I just looked at it. I just went, ugh. It just did not do anything for me. Now, I know there are hundreds of thousands of Agricola players out there, so please don't, I'm not here trying to troll or flame. It just didn't do anything for me. And it was bland looking. The gameplay didn't look enticing. It may be amazing. There were three different nights I tried to get it open, tried to get to the table. I couldn't do it. So, but Agricola Dead Harvest, man, you throw zombies on that motherfucker and it may be an entirely different game for me. Who knows, but I am watching closely. And you just know that 2026 is going to be heaving for crowdfunding games. You know, the uncertain tariff situation means that crowdfunding is likely to become a platform of choice for publishers and distributors that may otherwise not look at crowdfunding, right? And this may be part of why De Vere is entering the space. I'm not saying it is. I don't have any intel on that. But it's unusual for such an established game publisher to now go into crowdfunding. So I'm not sure why this come about. But watch this space. I have a ton on the way. I'm hoping to get the Higvaj. Those of you who remember the Higvaj, I'm hoping to get the Higvaj in the tank before I go away in 10 days. So watch this space. That is FOMO MOFO. This week on Voices in My Head, I want to get halfway serious for a minute, okay? I spend a lot of time just talking rubbish and just sharing, you know, the ups and downs and trials and tribulations, but I want to get halfway serious. Recently, the University of Plymouth conducted a study or released the results of their study directly relating to board games and mental health and how board games directly lead to an increase in confidence, assertiveness, real-life social engagement. Okay, I take a little exception to the notion that playing board games isn't quote-unquote real life, but I get their point. My point is there's empirical evidence through this and a number of other studies that have been done recently that board games enhance well-being. They foster inclusion. They support learning. They bring people together. Board games have been directly related to the slowing of dementia, an increase in mental capacity late in life. I am not quite late in life, in quotes. But I'll tell you what, you play Lacerda and you feel like Schrodinger's brain, both incredibly smart and impossibly dim simultaneously. It's amazing. But mental health is no joke. I'm not here to joke about it, you know. And I'm going to just let you behind the curtain a little bit. I have been through some shit the last, particularly three years ago to 1 year ago, or 4 years ago, 2 years ago. And, you know, recently I've had some stuff. So notwithstanding going into overly into details, one of my daughters made two very serious suicide attempts. I had one daughter who had crippling eating disorders and was on the verge of hospitalization. I don't have anything to do with her anymore, but a toxic and mentally unwell ex, and that haunts my psyche sometimes. I have genuine diagnosed PTSD, both with relation to that and to going through my experience with my daughter's struggles. It's no joke, okay? Right, like I have had a run, and I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm just letting you look behind the curtain, right? I am right now, today in my life, I am the strongest, the heartiest, the healthiest that I have fucking ever been. Best thing I ever did was engage in therapy. I'd never been in therapy before. And I want to say about 3 or 4 years ago, second best thing I ever did is board games. Okay, so the best thing I ever did was marry the fox and have three beautiful girls. But after that, and roads, and medicine, and sanitation, and the aqueduct, and if you get that reference, we can totally be friends. The 9th best thing I ever did was fall into board games. Board game people are the best people. We are all weird as fuck in our own way. And we own that. And I know there's no one listening here that isn't nodding, right, guys? Like, we are all fucking weirdos. And I'm not talking about having diagnoses or anything. We're just fucking weirdo nerds. Right, we get excited by cardboard, and I mean really excited. You get a new box, and you open it up, you pull that shrink, you slide your thumbnail off. I've got a little Leatherman blade that I cut the shrink off with, and while I'm cutting that shrink wrap off, I've got like tingles in my fucking loins. I don't really, okay, but like it is real. And you pop the lid off, and you got all this cardboard, and we're punching the cardboard. And when you get a clean punch, how good is it when you get a clean punch? You hit that cardboard, and your finger goes right through, and it drops right out. It is like, oh, so good. We like sparkly things. We like metal things. We like heavy things. We like rolling things. We have raging arousal for good mechanisms, or mechanisms that are thrown together in nice ways, right? Like you get mechanisms that go together in a nice way, and it is like goosebumps material. Despite my love of solo board gaming, board gamers, we're generally pack animals. Just swing by packs. Can't swing by PAX, but go to PAX or Essen or Gen Con, or more locally, the Board Game Barbecue Game Days or your local game days. There are groups getting together everywhere. You'll never find more introverts in one place feeling perfectly relaxed than you will at a board gaming convention or get together. You know, and we're so weird. We thrive on disappointment, right? Not in the game, but disappointment in our own performance or disappointment in our friends. Just as much we thrive on the successes, right? I love to win, but I prefer just to play. And if I lose, I'm like, whoo, that was a... We talked about this a number of times. Watching the Cracker lose at Sulkin was one of the greatest moments I've ever had at the table. It was fantastic. And I've never once, ever had a day of board gaming and felt worse afterwards. Except maybe after Fortune and Glory, because fuck that. Not to yuck anyone else's yum. It's just not for me. I literally craved fire after that game. But I still had fun with my friends. I still remember the game. How's that? I remember I was playing with Super Trooper and Coop. Can't remember if there's a fourth person. I think it was just three of us. We're playing Fortune and Glory. I still remember the game. I didn't enjoy it, but I still remember it. You know, and the board game table is absolutely an implicit therapy chamber. You know, do we talk heavy personal things? No. But also sometimes, you know, I had a moment this week where my middle daughter needed help with something that as a dad, I just did not want to know about. I didn't want the insight. I didn't need it. It was like, ugh. But as a dad, I'm like, whew, yep, Gotcha, I got you, kid. Let's sort this out. And then I'm going to go rock back and forth in the corner. You know, and I was playing games with Super Trooper. And I said, look, sorry, I got this shit going on. He's like, oh, is everything all right? I'm like, I told him, and he laughed. Not at me. He was laughing with my pain. He was Super Trooper has a daughter, right? And he was probably listening to that story going, oh, God. Oh, dear God. No, no, no. Oh, dear God. So anyway, circling back, personally, I've been through quite a bit of therapy as an adult. I think I did 2 years, right? And it was difficult and awkward. It was a really difficult and awkward thing to start. You know, it was the fox who sat me down. My whole world was crumbling. And she took my hand and she suggested it that it's a thing I might try. And the way she looked at me, I didn't even hesitate when she did. I just nodded and the next day I made a call. And it ended up being amazing, right? Now, I gotta be honest, you know, if you are getting counseling and you're talking to someone about all the shit in your life, it leaves you quite raw. It's confronting. It's exhausting. It's challenging. And not to overcook the situation, it's not unlike learning and playing a Lacerda. I'm not fucking around, right? The added benefit is in playing a Lacerda, sometimes at least, involves sitting around the table with my friends. And after all, friends are nothing more than the family you choose. All that's to say that I get the same sense of recharge, the same pacification of the soul when I get to the table, whether it's with the peanut, my amazing fox, or any of the family that I've chosen. You know, I get that same sense of calm, that same sense of reset. I am not spiritual, but I could label it with that. I get that sense of spiritual recharge. My battery, my cup is filled. You know, and for me, I'm grateful for every minute. You know, and not to be over serious, but Christmas can be hard, especially if it's your first Christmas without a loved one, your 10th Christmas without a loved one, your 20th Christmas without a loved one, or money's tight, or you've lost your job, or it's just minus 40 where you live, and you look outside and you just go, fuck my life. Christmas can be hard, okay? If you're suffering, you don't have to do it alone. If therapy's too confronting or too expensive, may I seriously suggest more board games? Now, if you're listening to me, you already play more board games. It's not that it's better. It's not better than counseling or therapy. It's not even better than nothing. It's downright great. And if you've got family that you've chosen, remember, friends are the family we choose. You've got family. And if you're having a bad time, well, in whatever way I can be, OMC is here for you. I'm no therapist, but I have fucking been there. And I can tell you there is a better world waiting. And I, at this time of the year, it's the start of 1 year, the end of another, I want to express my extreme gratitude for the world around me, to my beautiful family, and to the family that I've chosen. Those friends that join me at the table, those friends that join me around the barbecue, those friends that take my calls. I am grateful, and I have a wonderful life. But it took a while to get here. And for those of you that are struggling, Happy New Year, motherfuckers. Honestly. This week, the clap, it goes to every one of you. Everyone that listens, everyone that doesn't, every content creator, whether I like your content or not, you're all contributing. Every friendly local game store, every vendor on Etsy that sells me shiny things for board games and other people. You, every fucking one of you, this clap is for you. As usual, you can reach me on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can email wonmanclapping@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram at @OneManClapping. You can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG and subscribe to Guild 4426. Even if the only thing you want to say on there is you're an idiot for recommending a game called Birds because I thought it was shit, I'm happy to hear it. Hey, man. I like what I like. You hate what you hate. And we can still be friends. You can help OMC by dropping me a like on Facebook or Instagram or by leaving a review on whatever platform you choose. If it's a bad review, I'll survive. Thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious and the fact that you chose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. But remember, you don't have to. This week's episode has been brought to you by the joyous elation of 10 days off. I am back at work for another 10 days starting Monday, and then I'm off again. We as the family are off to Fiji for a family holiday. I'm hoping to have a couple of episodes in the tank for your enjoyment to get you through. But that means I'm only working 2 weeks out of six. That is my kind of summer if you can do it. Peace out, mofos.